Okay, thanks a lot for the introduction. Hi, my name is Jonghyun, and today I'll talk about signatures about deconfined phase transitions on the Shastri-Sutherland lattice applications to quantum critical strontium copper boron oxide material. This work is done in collaboration with Yijang Yeo, Subir Sachdev, and Ashvin Vishama. So probably I see some like quantum info people, and they would wonder what does deconfined quantum critically mean. So I'll give a like brief review on what this is. So first, what is deconfinement? The first word of this word. If you consider like 1/3 fractional quantumable phase, you know that the electron fractionalizes into 3 quasi-particles, each of them carrying 1/3 of the electron charge. Also, they're interacting with each other through some emergent gauge field. But in the fractional quantumable phase, this gauge field coupling is weak, and this anions, the quasi-particle carrying 1/3 charge, is moving almost independently. The consequence of that, for example, is that if you measure the shot noise in this material, then you see that the shot noise is smaller than what it has to be for ordinary metal for a given current density. So this is the example of deconfinement. You get your ordinary degrees of freedom fractionalized, and you get some kind of emergent gauge field. But now we want to look at this deconfinement at some special quantum system placed at the quantum critical point. Consider 2 phases in squared lattice with spin 1/2 per site. You know that like on one side there's a Neil order phase antiferromagnet, which breaks the SO3 spin rotation symmetry. On the other hand, you have a valence bond solid where each pair of spin 1/2 forms some spin singlet and breaks some lattice symmetry. This breaks C4 lattice rotation symmetry. So on the Neil side, it's characterized by this Neil order parameter. And the VVS side, it's characterized by this VVS order parameter, either VX or VY being non-zero. So in the ordinary Landau-Ginzburg theory, when you have 2 order parameters, you can write down some free energy. And you can imagine what is the most generic scenario for the phase transitions between 2 different symmetry breaking phases. On one side, you have a total symmetry group GA cross GB. On one side, GA is broken. On the other side, GB is broken. If you think about like this field theory, unless you like really like fine tune the parameters, these 3 are like generic possibility. You may just get like a first order transition, which is not described by this field theory, or you may get phase coexistence, or like first Neil order get disordered, and then like VBS order develop later. So these are the like generic possibilities within the classical paradigm. However, if 2 order parameters are somehow intertwined in a very specific way, then you may get the second order transition between Neil order and VBS order without any fine tuning. So how is it possible in this system? If you think about Neil order, it's basically a spin. All the spins are pointing in one direction. And now, if you imagine how this order gets destroyed, it's destroyed by the proliferation of some defects, like called Skirmion configurations. Because like if you think about Neil order, if it's just like smooth spin wave like proliferates, it can never really destroy the Neil order. So you need some like topological defects to really destroy the Neil order. And by proliferation of these skirmions, you would enter the paramagnetic phase. However, what like Duncan Haldane long time ago showed is that this proliferation of defects, which corresponds to the monopole event in the imaginary time path integral formulation, has some non-trivial Berry phase under the lattice symmetry. So if you think about some coherent path integral formulation for spin, it has a classical piece plus Berry phase piece. You know that like SX and SY has some like commutation relations, like a Heisenberg uncertainty relation. So to encode that in a path integral formulation, you need to introduce some quantum piece, which corresponds to the Western mean Witten term. And that Berry phase, if you go to 2 plus 1 dimension, you can write down this classical piece corresponding to just nonlinear sigma model of the Neil order parameter. And there's this Western mean Witten term contribution for each spin. And there is this staggering minus phase factor, because Neil order is like a staggering. So it's not that they're all added up uniformly. They have some staggering signs. And this omega is basically the solid angle swept by each spin during the imaginary time evolution. So there's this term. And as you can see, this is unlike this term, this is written in the lattice form. It's a discrete sum. Because if you naively do change this discrete sum into an continuum form, then this contribution will just vanish. So if you really want to include this non-trivial Berry phase contribution, you should think in the lattice. And now, going back to this figure, like under the imaginary time evolution, each spin have some trajectory along the imaginary time evolution and form some arc in the block sphere. And they will swap some solid angle. And when you have a monopole, and when this monopole is moving around like just one single spin site, then like this arc basically characterizing the trajectory of the spin along the imaginary time evolution will also move due to the monopole event. But actually, when this like red monopole move encircle this blue spin, all the other trajectories will just move back and forth and coming back to its original position. But this blue trajectory will actually encircle total 4 pi solid angle. And that will give you this non-trivial Berry phase. So each spin, so this is drawn in the dual lattice. And each spin will behave like a 4 pi s flux or minus 4 pi s flux with respect to the monopole. So you can show that, you can already see that when monopole, like for spin 1/2, like when monopole hop from here to here, you'll get phase vector I. So it transforms non-trivially under lattice C for rotation symmetry. So which basically means that it carries some charge under lattice rotation symmetry. So proliferation, or put differently, condensation of this monopole will definitely break the C4 rotation symmetry, because it will provide some like modulation on the lattice that has some angular momentum. Okay. So you can basically identify this monopole operator in terms of the linear combination of the VVS order parameter. And this is one identification, and this choice depends on some gauge choice you make. So you can think about when there is a monopole condensation, it will have some like U1 phase factor. And depending on which U1 phase factor you have, you'll get either like columnal VVS pattern or pocket VVS pattern. So this red dots correspond to pocket VVS pattern, and this blue dots correspond to columnal VVS pattern. On the other side, you can think about how this order parameter intertwinement happens from the VVS order side. So this is a picture explored by Michael Levin and Santil. You first examine some columnal VVS pattern and think about defect there. And you can see that this defect carries a spin 1/2. So proliferation of this VVS defect will lead you to the magnetically ordered phase. Now, why does this transition has to be deconfined quantum criticality? It seems like, okay, now you have a two-order parameter, some are intertwined, so you'd probably now accept when one get destroyed, the other one should develop. But it's more profound than that. So at that exactly the critical point, your like VVS order parameter fluctuation and the Neil order parameter fluctuations are both gapless and somehow intertwined. But like those two fluctuations carry totally different quantum numbers. So you may want to know how can you integrate those fluctuations on an equal footing. One way to do that is think about some fractionalized degrees of freedom, where like one way to organize them will give you new order parameter, and the other way to organize them gives you the like VBS order parameter in some sense. So the way to do it is introducing CPUN theory. You can fractionalize new order parameter in terms of the two component spinons labeled by Z. And because you fractionalize them, you have to introduce additional gauge field that actually bounds them when they get integrated out. So you get this CPUN description, CPUN theory description, where spinons are coupled through this U1 gauge field A. And actually, from here to the step from nonlinear sigma model to CPUN theory, this very phase vector, which can only be written in the lattice, are actually ignored. So you must find some way to integrate this piece of information into the CPUN theory. And that's like the way is to study how like monopole transforms. So this emergent gauge field A, you can identify the monopole configuration of this emergent gauge field corresponds to the monopole event of the spin configuration. That's somewhat non-trivial identification, but just take it granted.
I have a simple question. Okay. So usually when you introduce gauge fields, it's because you have some redundancy in your description.
Right.
So here, is it because in the sigma model, N has to be of unit norm? And then when you fractionalize, there's many ways that I can do it.
Yeah, basically, this Z dagger Z, you can always rotate Z by some phase vector.
Okay,
so that's... that's the redundancy you have. So yeah, that's why this emergent gauge field, U1 gauge field A arise.
And one small other thing. So the monopole, the operator that you presented before is local, right? So you still have local order parameters for both BBS and for the NEL.
Yeah, basically. So NEL order parameter is just written in by this.
Okay.
And the VVS order parameter, which is the monopole here, is can be identified as a gauge monopole given by this gauge field A.
A simple question, why is it called
CP1? Because actually...
not that complex projected thing, no?
What was
Z lives in CP1.
Right.
Okay.
Because the Z1 square plus Z2 square is 1.
Mm-hmm.
Z, yeah.
This factor is gauged. So.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Now you can identify order parameter in terms of this gauge monopole or bilinear of Z's. And in this way, you can somewhat integrate this different order parameters by just single theory. So actually, this kind of DQCP in the square lattice has been already extensively studied by Anders Sandvig and Adam Nahum. So originally, you have a SO3 spin rotation symmetry and C4 or Z4 lattice symmetry. And at the critical point, when you're at the critical point, like your gapless degrees of you have a gapless degrees of freedom, and some operators RG flow to be irrelevant, and you may get some larger symmetry than what microscopic Hamiltonian has. So this SO3 cross Z4 enhanced into SO3 cross U1, and the further enhanced to SO5, basically meaning that this 3 plus 2 order parameters becomes integrated under SO5. And when there's an emergent SO5 symmetry, this two order parameter fluctuation should have the same scaling dimensions and same anomalous dimensions. So at the mean field level, we know that, for example, in the Wilson-Fisher fixed point, the scaling dimension for nil order parameter in 2 plus 1 or 3D is 1/2, or 1/2 plus some tiny corrections. But here, if n is actually written as a bilinear of z's, then this is like z to the 4. And if Z is a more fundamental degrees of freedom, its scaling dimension must be much larger than 1/2. And that's exactly captured by this anomalous dimension, which is measured to be 0.26 in the Monte Carlo simulation. Oh, you seem very unhappy about that.
There's nothing wrong.
Okay, yeah. But there has been a controversy whether this symmetry enhancement and e-confined quantum phase transition is really a second order or some weakly first order transition, meaning that its correlation length is really, really large. So under like a finite size simulation, it seems like second order transition, but maybe it might not be the like continuous transition. Yeah, so this was for comparison. When you have a like Wilson-Fisher fixed point, then anomalous dimension is like really small compared to like this large value here. Yeah, so eta is a anomalous dimension for the.
Wait, what's n?
Oh, n is the dimension.
Oh.
Of like O3 Wilson-Fisher.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay, so I guess it's enough for reviewing the confined quantum critical point. And now let me explain what Shastri-Sohlen lattice is. So this Shastri-Sohlen material is a layered quantum magnet. And basically, copper ion carries a spin 1/2. And there's a antiferromagnetic interaction between copper atoms. The spins in the copper atom. So originally, you have like this kind of structure, but it can be simplified like this, because you only care about spin 1/2 degrees of freedom. And then further, you can just like distort it to the square lattice form, because it's simpler. And the J1 is the antiferromagnetic interaction between nearest spin 1/2, and J2 is this diagonal interaction. So when there is only like J1 and J2 is zero, we know that it's going to be just nil order state, because it's just mixed series antiferromagnetic interaction. So what else can it be? But when J1 is zero and there's only J2, then basically all dimers are decoupled from the others, and each dimer will just form a spin singlet, forming a dimerized paramagnetic phase. That basically means that in between there is some kind of frustration, and you may expect something else. And what happens is that in between there arises a Plaquette balanced bond solid, where Z2 glide reflection symmetry is broken. You get Plaquette singlet either like this or like that. So it's Z2 symmetry breaking. What's very exciting is that recently, like 2 years ago, people did some experiment on this layered paramagnet. They basically applied the pressure, and as I showed here, it has this like kind of buckle structure. So when you pressurize a system, then you can effectively change the ratio between J1 and J2.
Okay.
Yeah, you can effectively change the ratio between J1 and J2. So upon applying the pressure, the ratio alpha will increase, and you can basically make a phase transition from dimer to Plaquette to nil order phase. And what we're excited about is that this transition point is a phase transition between two different symmetry breaking phases. So if it can be a second order transition, it will be the strong candidate for the deconfined quantum critical point.
So how do they know the ratio of exchange parameters change? How do you get this value of alpha from the experiment?
So it's a very good question.
It's a hard thing to do. So
I think they did some very qualitative theoretical calculation and trying to match that with spin excitation spectrum.
Still a neutron scattering experiment?
Yeah, this result is obtained by neutron scattering experiment.
Like, okay, two-prong spectrum or something like that?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they didn't go.
Yeah, they fit triple in spectrum. But when I was trying to read their supplementary material, I couldn't really understand well, because it seems like data points are not enough. they can only measure this at like very specific angle due to the limitation of the geometry because they have to apply very.
So by looking at the figure, I don't see any data from here.
Yeah, there is no like data point. I actually exchanged an email with this guy.
Data point very far away from the.
That's true. They said like they measured within the dimer phase and they measured several points in the Plunkett phase, but they couldn't like while applying the pressure more, sample got broken. And somehow I don't really understand, but somehow they managed to reach this pressure without like continuously changing the pressure, and they confirmed the formation of the Neil order parameter. So yeah, this experiment seems somewhat mysterious to me as well.
Are you saying that they measured the broken sample?
No. They couldn't like they told me that they couldn't like measure the continuously, but like they could just sample specific pressure, and this figure is somewhat like just extrapolation from their imagination, I think. But they said they measured like few points in the high pressure, and I couldn't understand why they couldn't do it continuously.
So in high pressure case, is it clear that there's no structure transition?
Oh, that actually there is a structural transition that they draw this line.
Okay.
So at the high pressure, as they change the temperature, they see from tetragonal to like monoclinic upon applying the pressure. Oh, there's this at the above is C2 and lower is like P2.
So is there evidence for a plug in this experiment?
Yeah. So. Basically, they measured some like triplet excitation spectrum, and when you have a like dimerized phase, then you have all the symmetry of this P4G space group. But when you have a Plunkett phase, then it will break either glide reflection or some diagonal reflection or Plunkett center C4. That means that when you have a like triplet excitation spectrum, which was initially degenerate by the symmetry, the degeneracy will be lifted by this perturbation, and they observe this splitting of the magnum branch. That was their evidence for the symmetry breaking.
So showing that the original isomer is not broken.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if external pressure break the isomer, then we don't know whether
right,
it's
yeah.
breaking the isomer.
Right. Yeah, so that's just our hope that this would be the candidate for DQCP. It's from the experiment, of course, you should probably compare with X-ray scattering as well to see whether there is a structural change. But yeah.
The material is 3D, right?
Yeah, material is layered.
They're applying pressure such that the symmetry of the 2D lattice doesn't change. Right?
Yeah, because it's just Z directional pressure.
So the interaction between layers will also increase?
Yeah, that will also increase, and I think that's actually crucial.
Okay.
So initially, interlayer coupling strength is about like 10% of the intralayer coupling. But as you pressurize more, it will increase. And later, I will like discuss that like this interlayer coupling will favor the Neil order phase. So actually, that can be the reason why Neil order is formed upon increasing pressure. Okay. So, as I discussed previously, each spin side acts like some 2 pi flux in the case of spin 1/2 with respect to the monopole. So these are all kind of gauge dependent. You first fix that like what barrier phase would be created by inserting the monopole, then you assume certain like flux pattern consistent with this alternating flux pattern. Then you can show how, for a certain gauge choice, how lattice symmetries will transform the monopole and Neil order parameter. So let's take an example, like fourfold rotation symmetry with respect to the site. You can see that when it goes from here to there, you get an I phase vector, so you just multiply by I. And actually, it's important to choose some reference point. here the C4 rotation symmetry is with respect to basically at this point. If you choose the other point, then it will be m dagger going to minus im dagger. So all this business is basically relying on certain gauge choice, but later the result is consistent no matter what gauge you take. So the thing is, in the Schestrius and lattice, if you're starting from the Neil order phase, the Neil order is basically equivalent to the Neil order of the square lattice. So you can just start from the Neil order here, and then what you can do is writing down this P4G group's symmetry operators in terms of square lattices symmetry operators, then you can easily figure out how this P4G group's symmetry operators will transform the monopoles. Yeah, and then what you have to keep in mind is that actually in both Plotkin VBS and Neil order phase, glide reflection symmetry is not there. So at first glance, it seems like glide reflection will map m dagger to minus m dagger. So the glide reflection symmetry will basically suppress the single monopole proliferation term. But because those symmetries are not there in both phases, you cannot use glide reflection symmetry to exclude the single monopole terms. But what you can use is that time reversal times glide reflection symmetry is there in the Neil order phase, and that will basically kill the single monopole terms.
Sorry, I didn't fully understand. So M is still forbidden by the glide reflection. So why?
No. Glide reflection symmetry is not there in the Neil order phase.
Yeah. Okay, but it is there in the field theory, right?
No.
Order phase, you spontaneously order the Z boson, so that breaks your glide reflection. But the monopole is nevertheless forbidden.
No, that's not true. The reason why monopole is forbidden in the square lattice case is because you have a C4 rotation symmetry with respect to the site, right? So it basically means that monopole at this site versus monopole at this site will have equal amplitude but different phase vector. So that's why monopoles, single monopole terms or single double or monopole terms are suppressed in the square lattice case.
Sure.
But here, we don't have a glide reflection symmetry. So you have a certain phase vector difference, but you don't know, but amplitude being equal is not guaranteed.
Sorry, I thought your lattice system has the glide.
Your lattice has a glide reflection symmetry.
Right.
But you're in the Neil order phase where the glide reflection symmetry is spontaneously broken.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So your theory has that glide reflection symmetry, right? It's just a specific phase doesn't have that.
Yeah, but when you're in the specific phase, that mean field contribution will come into play.
At the critical point.
Yeah,
at the critical point it won't, but we're starting from the Neil order phase and approaching to the critical point. So we should not assume the glide reflection symmetry from the beginning.
Well, you have the glide symmetry in your component, right? So then.
But it's different because when you're thinking about some, so actually when you're writing down even the some, okay. When you're even writing down this nonlinear sigma model, you assume certain anti-ferromagnetic ordering. There's a.
You don't have to. You get anti-ferromagnetic ordering only if you have negative mass for the Z, in which case Z spontaneous.
No, I mean here. Yeah, but.
I mean, that's one way to start, but to get CP1, that's not the only choice. I mean, it's the first line is an intermediate route to get to the CP1 model. The CP1 model is a well-defined thing on its own, so you don't have to.
Yeah, but since you're in the Neil order phase, you cannot just assume, because symmetry is spontaneously broken, I don't think you can use glide reflection symmetry because it's not there.
But is there?
For example, in the Neil order phase, you don't have a translation symmetry, right? And you cannot assume that monopole will be suppressed. Certain pattern of the monopole will be suppressed by the translation symmetry because translation symmetry is not just there. Actually, it's not there in both VVS and Okay, it's there for certain cases, but.
The translation is somewhat, okay, we can talk all.
Yeah.
You can put MPC.
Okay. So the point is that time reversal times glide reflection leaves the nil order parameters same. So you can use that symmetry to suppress the monopole, single monopole proliferation effect in the nil order phase.
So what does that mean exactly? So if you use a time reversal times the glide reflection,
yeah,
then you have that symmetry.
Yeah.
But then still there's also phase factor, and that's why you suppress the single monopole effect.
Right.
Is it the argument?
Yeah.
You're saying you use the same argument.
Yeah.
The top one whole thing. You can use the same argument so that you can suppress the single monopole effect.
Yeah.
Somehow that maintains whatever the magnitude, which is change the phase factor.
Yeah, basically. Because like time reversal glide is an anti-unitary symmetry and it maps M dagger into M, for example. It maps M dagger into M dagger into minus M. So if a time reversal glide maps M dagger into minus M, so you can see that this one is prohibited by the symmetry. And this one is also prohibited because like I will goes from I to minus I as well. So any single monopole term you can write down will be suppressed by the time reversal glide. And also there is this reflection symmetries. And due to this reflection symmetries, in the double monopole level, you also have like a two possible double monopole terms. Like one is a real part of the double monopole, and the other is an imaginary part of the double monopole. But the imaginary part of the double monopole will be suppressed by the reflection symmetries. So you're only left with real part of the monopole square term in the Chesterton lattice. Of course, in the square lattice, you have a C4 rotation symmetry that maps M dagger to I M dagger. So only allowed term is like M to the fourth term. And what you can see is that at the DQCP, in this case, this M to the fourth term is irrelevant, and all higher order terms are irrelevant as well. So this Z4 symmetry of the M dagger will enlarge into U1. But here, actually, you get this a double monopole term, and that's relevant. So such a symmetry enhancement would never occur. So what happens in this case? If you think about this, a monopole Lagrangian can be just qualitatively, conceptually written like this. And by redefinition of lambda tilde, lambda r tilde, lambda 2 tilde, you get like R tilde imaginary monopole square plus lambda 2 tilde real monopole square. So you're initially at this SO5 DQCP point, and as you tune, so your training parameters are here, and lambda 2 is some like perturbation already existing. And as you're tuning R to lambda 2, then this part will vanish, but this part is there. And it basically means that originally you had this like Vx, Vy fluctuation altogether, but it can be, again, take some different linear combination, and where imaginary M is a Vx minus Vy, real M is Vx plus Vy, and Vx plus Vy becomes massive, and it becomes gapped out, while Vx minus Vy remains gapless at the critical point. So originally you had this O4 order parameter, but because lambda 2 is larger than 0, a real part of the monopole fluctuation becomes gapped out, and you're left with 4 gapless order parameter fluctuations at the critical point. and you still expect due to the now West Germany, O5 at West Germany Wittgenstein term will reduce down to O4 theta term, and because of the topological term, you still expect this intertwinement between the order parameters and symmetry enhancement from SO3 cross E2. Oh, so if lambda 2 is negative, that means that you'll get different O4 critical point. There, imaginary part of the monopole fluctuation becomes gapped out, and you're left with real part of the monopole. That actually corresponds to, so depending on the sign of the lambda 2, you get either square plaquette versus diamond plaquette. By diamond plaquette, I mean you get a singlet formed at the square with diagonal bond, and square plaquette, I mean you get a singlet formed at the empty square. Okay. So, transition between tuning the lambda 2. But if you tune lambda, you tune lambda 2, it will be, at, when lambda, equal, lambda 2 equals 0, you'll get O5 BQCP. You mean?
From square to diamond. Yeah. So you mentioned that two VBS have different symmetry.
Right.
So do you know if it's a first order or something?
I think that's a very good question. Yeah,
it's not clear. Let's see.
It would probably be, so at the critical point, you have a Z4 symmetry, and it may enlarge into U1.
Sure.
But
yeah,
we can talk later. So we did this infinite DMRG study for the Chastre-Sutherland model. Basically, infinite DMRG is DMRG, how should I say, some tensor network ansatz, assuming that each unit cell is repeated infinitely along the one direction. And usually this is a method used for one dimensional system, but by enlarging the unit cell and assuming some cylinder geometry, you can use this method still to the two-dimensional system as well. So we could simulate in 2D DMRG, it's limited by the circumference size. And we could simulate up to L equals 6, 8, and 10, and bond dimension up to 5,000. And we obtain basically this phase diagram. And the transition point was detected by the first order derivative of the energy. So the transition between the dimer VVS and plaquette VVS is definitely a first order transition, because dimer VVS is always the exact eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, and it has an exact energy. And plaquette VVS, you can see the energy is moving like this, so this must be the first order transition point. But now, when you look at the transition between plaquette VVS and Neel, seems like at least up to bond dimension 10, the first order derivative, energy derivative seems continuous. And in the plaquette VVS phase, you see that singular plaquettes are formed at the empty square, and your order parameter, this dotted line is basically the critical point extracted from the energy derivative, and it's disappearing across the transition. Because we're in the finite system size, it never goes to exactly zero at the transition point. And this is the correlation length spectra. So in the DMRG, the nice thing about the DMRG is that you can extract the correlation lengths for different quantum numbers. And here we plotted correlation length for spin singlet channel and spin triplet channel. This is the 1 over the correlation length, which means that and 1 over the correlation length can be considered as it's proportional to the mass of the excitation corresponding to the excitation mediating this correlation. So this can be effectively thought of as some excitation energy for the excitation carrying this quantum number. So you can see that actually at the critical point, the correlation length for the spin singlet becomes picked, and it's very close to the spin triplet correlation length. And if you plot their ratio at the transition point extracted from the energy derivative, you can see that they're approaching to one as I increase the system size. So this is not the direct evidence, but it may signal that there is indeed some emergent symmetry between spin singlet and triplet fluctuations. And next, interesting.
Just a correlation length.
Yeah, this is just correlation length.
You don't have any like exponents like that.
Yeah, you cannot extract exponents.
The correlation length of two different order templates not necessarily to be the same.
Yeah, it's not necessarily.
You can't get some non-universal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm saying that this is kind of indirect signal that it may indicate. So this is not, I don't think this is a foolproof for emergent symmetry. You're just trying to say that, I mean, also the fact that this transition, the singlet is like coming down compared to the triplet is already some signature for this transition is really mediated by the monopole proliferation. And the fact that they're approaching to the same value as you increase the system size. Because like at the smaller system size, I think it's actually kind of expected, but your singlet has a like much, much larger correlation length than the triplet correlation length, mainly because now for smaller system size, it's like it's quasi 2D and you can not really have a disordered, nil ordered phase. But the fact that they're approaching and to the unity can be the signature for the emergent symmetry of this that scale.
So you mentioned before that it's unclear whether this is second order phase transition or not.
Oh, it's clear from up to this system size that it's a second order transition.
So have you looked at the say correlation length for the monopole operator?
It's kind of hard to really look at monopole operator in this simulation, but what we can indirectly guess is that spin singlet would correspond to the monopole fluctuations. Here, what we can extract is a correlation length for certain quantum numbers. And yeah.
Wait, I'm confused. So if the monopole is the one, or the monopole operator is the one that should have an infinite correlation length of the critical point, right?
Yeah.
Then you're saying that you expect this spin singlet to be related to this one, but I see in this plot that the correlation length never goes to a large part.
Yeah, because it's limited by the finite bond dimension. So
you expect that as the bond dimension
increases,
then this goes to zero.
Right.
Okay. It's not necessarily true because you compactify your system and a singlet.
Right, right. That's also true.
You actually introduce a scale.
Yeah.
The fact that it's in a cylinder is as if you're non-zero temperature.
Yeah. So, so the simulation is both limited by the finite circumference size and the finite bond dimension. So
then you don't necessarily know whether the transition is close to synchronous.
Yeah, that's true, but
so it's not obvious that
it's a synchronous transition. Right. It's unclear whether in the thermodynamic limit it will be a synchronous transition.
So this is from tensor metrics, right?
Yeah.
But I guess you don't have a momentum resolution.
The momentum resolution is kind of hard to extract because here all the gapless degrees of freedom will be located at
like
zero or pi momenta. But
not accessible.
Yeah, that's not accessible because we are using this the doubled column to accommodate this Shastri-Sutherland lattice structure. So zero and pi are identified. So yeah, you get the correlation length, but all we can say is that its momenta in the infinite direction is zero.
Yes.
Yeah, it's actually zero. Okay, so let me tell you about one interesting stuff of this.
And is that the correlation length associated with the broken symmetry or not?
or we think it's associated with the broken symmetry.
Because if the momentum is not obsessive, so I mean, the spectrum has to be solved at the corresponding wave vector, right? So the question is whether that momentum is accessible, right, in real geometry.
Yeah.
So if you're measuring a correlation length, like, it's an arbitrary momentum position, it doesn't have to diverge. Right? The cap doesn't have to go to zero. The correlation length doesn't have to be infinite. If you cannot access the relevant momentum position, isn't it?
But, I mean, here in the DMRG, like this, you'll basically capture the largest correlation length. So,
yeah, but maybe that's the largest correlation length within, you know, among momentum position that's accessible to your cylinder geometry.
Yeah.
So,
but is there any inaccessible momentum point?
No, no. Imagine that you know, there's a narrow overhead, then there'll be correlation lengths. I guess you have to measure the spectrum at the momentum pi or something like that, isn't it? So if imagine that the momentum is not allowed in your cylinder geometry.
So it's not the momentum is not allowed.
Yeah.
It's just that like those two momentums are identified, which means it's just that we don't know, we cannot just resolve zero from pi. So two things will just appear together and you don't have a resolution. It's not that it's inaccessible.
So in principle, it knows about that.
Yeah.
Just that you don't know which is which.
Yeah. So actually, Inchen advised me to try the single column simulation, but not for this model, but for the square lattice model. And you can see that initially the zero momentum becomes actually pi in the single column simulation and with the same correlation length spectra. Okay, so I want to discuss about this absence of dangerously relevant operator, which was quite important in the context of SO5 DQCP. So in the conventional SO5 or easy plane O4 DQCP, there is a separation of length scales between correlation length for spin and VVS fluctuations due to the emergent U1 symmetry. So if you think about RG flow of this quartic monopole term, at the DQCP point, it's irrelevant, so it will just decrease. But if you're away from the DQCP, you have a certain like correlation length for the system. And within the correlation length, systems are still critical. So this term doesn't know whether it's in a critical phase or not, so it will initially decrease. But once like you RG enough that your length scale is exceeding the correlation length, this term will get to know that, oh, we are not in the critical point. So, and matter fields are gapped. And when you have just a U1 gauge field theory, we all know that monopoles are relevant. So it will like scale back to the larger value. But the thing is, if you're in the finite system size and the finite bond dimension, if you're away from the DQCP point, you can never like RG like enough to scale back. So if you're at the finite system size, your RG flow will stop at a certain point, and this quartic term, which endows a mass to the monopole fluctuation, will still just decrease, which basically means that away from the DQCP point for these two scenarios, your monopole fluctuation will always have a larger correlation length than the spin correlation length. Okay, so this was the non-trivial prediction from the earlier paper, 2004 paper. But now, what's interesting in our case is that because we don't have a Z4 symmetry, RG flow for double monopole term is always relevant. And it basically means that away from the DQC point, it will immediately gap out the monopole fluctuations. So if you compare the, so ignore the left column. This is the model for the square lattice. You have a J1 and J2. And this model is believed to realize the transition between nil order and columnal VBS order, or Plotkin VBS order. And what you can see is that throughout the phase, the entire phase, here it's the another different phase. The singular fluctuation has a lower energy, has a larger correlation length than the triplet, but here you can see the singlet becomes immediately gapped out. So basically tells you that there's no like dangerous irrelevant scaling and associated separation of length scale. So the previously discussed EQCP scenarios, they're square or easy plane square, is a symmetry enhancement of some spin rotation times Z4 enlarging to a larger symmetry. And here, Z4 has a dangerously irrelevant scaling. But in rectangular or chassis cell line deformation, you do not have such a absence of the dangerous irrelevant scaling. So it also basically tells, and you may wonder, oh, like in the VVS phase, you may just have a singlet fluctuation to be just like softer than the triplet fluctuation. That can be actually true, because the energy scale that determines the VVS order parameter fluctuation versus triplet energy in the VVS phase is somewhat different. But in some like mean field treatment, you can actually show that the singulon or VVS order parameter fluctuation must have a larger energy than the triplon. So this ordering deep in the VVS phase in the thermodynamic limit is non-universal stuff. But this dangerously relevant scaling guarantees that this must happen at the finite system size. So it basically teaches that in all this like a Monte Carlo simulation of the DQCP, because we are limited by the finite system size, in the VVS side, the spectrum might suffer from this dangerously irrelevant scaling. Okay. So yeah, the left figure was just to make a contrast between the phase transitions from the nil order phase to the dimerized VVS phase. You can just see that spin triplet is the lowest or largest correlation length excitation throughout the across the phase transition point. Okay, so now I'd like to talk about spectral signatures of DQCP and emergent symmetry in the real material. So previously, I mentioned that there can be an emergent offer symmetry that between VVS and nil order parameter. And it's basically kept, the field theory is basically captured by this O4 nonlinear sigma model with zeta term. And when you have this emergent O4 symmetry, for each generator of the O4 symmetry, you get to get this Noether current given by this formula. And the non-trivial prediction of the like emergent symmetry is that this conserved current must have a fixed scaling dimension of 2. So, and if the some current operator is not a conserved current, then its scaling dimension will be deviating from 2, signaling that this current, the charge associated with this current is actually not the like, truly conserved quantum number. So vanishing of this eta indicates the current conservation. And the nice thing is that this exponent, eta, can be measured from the spin-spin correlation function. So yeah, let's think about some scattering experiment in this Chastity cell line lattice. We all learned from our group theory class that when you have some glide reflection symmetries, then and if your scatterer is symmetric under the glide reflection symmetry, then Bragg peaks, there is an extinction of Bragg peaks at like certain specific momenta. For example, what glide reflection symmetry does is, okay, it must be actually, there's not half vector, I'm sorry for the typo. But what it does is it translates by one lattice site and then do a reflection. So under the glide reflection symmetry, this Fourier transform of the scattering intensity maps to e to the I qx and qx minus qi. And if qx is, for example, pi, then you can show that the spectral intensity must be 0. So at this x, y momenta point, you would not get any Bragg peaks coming from the lattice. And that's actually very nice, because those points are where we're going to get very interesting signals. first, let's think about the Magnus spectrum. In the nil order phase, you have a gapless Magnus spectrum at the pi-pi momenta, this endpoint. And that will be just like very sharp peak of the Magnus. But when you're at the deconfined quantum critical point, basically, you have your Magnus will be fractionalized into spinons, and your spectrum will be broadened into the continuum. So if you can measure the spectral intensity over here, then by measuring the how spectral intensity changes with frequency omega, you can extract the anomalous dimension of the spin-spin correlation function. Also, what's very interesting is that at the DQCP point, you get a non-zero spectral wave at the X point, which is a pi zero momentum. And this is the point where you get the conserved current of the Ofer symmetry, which corresponds to this JY operator, which is given by this function. We know that like a monopole is basically a VVS order parameter, which carries either pi zero or zero pi momenta. And nil order parameter case carries a pi pi momenta. So combination of them must give a pi zero or zero pi momenta. And that's exactly it. So one may wonder why why the conserved current is the lowest scaling operator with the lowest scaling dimension at X point. You can also form some operator like n times just imaginary particle m, which should have a definitely larger, a smaller scaling dimension than this operator. So that spectral intensity can be larger. The problem is that, as we proved here, for operator to appear, for some spectral wave to appear at this X point, your scatter, your operator must be glide reflection symmetry odd under the symmetry. The reason why you do not get any spectral wave here for the lattice distribution is because this lattice distribution is even under the glide reflection symmetry. But this is odd under the glide reflection symmetry because glide reflection has y to minus y, imaginary m to minus imaginary m, and n to minus n. So whole thing is glide reflection odd, but n times imaginary m will be glide reflection even, which means it can never appear at x and y point because of the same reason as the extinction of the Bragg peaks. So at x point, the strongest signal you would observe is coming from the conserved current of the Ofer symmetry, which corresponds to the rotation from the nil order parameter to the VVS order parameter.
So that means on the square lattice at x point, I should have an operator with a smaller scaling dimension?
No, actually in the square lattice,
yeah.
X and y point, you have probably additional symmetries. So you still at the x and y point, the square lattice, the biggest intensity will come from the conserved, like O5 current now.
I see.
But because this is the Brillouin zone for the Chastrison lattice. For square lattice, this will be the Brillouin zone, right?
I see. And that's how it's the
Yeah. Okay. So now let's think about the phonon spectrum. So this is the usual like acoustic branch of the phonon in the Chastrison lattice. Oh, okay, I forgot to mention. So if this JY has an exact scaling dimension 2, then the intensity as a function of frequency will be exactly linear. And if it deviates from the linear relation, that will signal the deviation from our system from the O4 symmetry. You can also measure the phonon spectrum. And this is the acoustic branch for the phonon. And we know that at the X point, there must be a gapless fluctuation of the VVS order parameter. And we can write down, actually, that there's a coupling between the VVS order parameter and the phonon. And that basically means that the phonon branch must inherit some spectral wave from the VVS fluctuation. And because phonon spectrums are gapped at the X point, if you get some gapless spectral wave at the X point for the phonon, then it must be coming from the VVS fluctuation. And by measuring this intensity, you can extract the anomalous dimension for the VVS order parameter. So now, as the actual material is three-dimensional, you can ask about what's the consequence of having interlayer coupling. Okay. Sorry. So this is the single layer of unicell for the single layer of the Chesterly Sutherland lattice. But now if you think of a 3D structure, each layer is shifted from the other layer by like 1/2 by 1/2 wave vector. So it has this kind of stacking pattern. And if you think about this like diamonds, then there is this interlayer antiferromagnetic coupling, which is like 10% strength of the interlayer coupling. So the situation is basically summarized as a coupling layers of DQCPs by some coupling terms. And what you can see is that this coupling of the order parameters is always the relevant perturbation, because this phi, the order parameter scaling exponent, is about like 0.6 to 0.7. Estimated from the Monte Carlo simulation. So if you have a product of them, it can never exceed 3. I mean, it's of course not a rigorous statement, but you can kind of guess that when you add like 0.62 and 0.6, it wouldn't be larger than 3. So it will be always relevant. And the effect of this interlayer coupling will be locking the order parameter across the layers. And when order parameters are locked across the layers, this Westerman and Witten terms can be either added or canceled depending on the determinant of the G. And when this Westerman and Witten terms across the layers are canceled, it will just simply become theta term, as we know from like coupling spin one up into the chain. But when it's added, then the system will behave as if it's a classical system, because now, like, you'll have a like large kind of group of neighboring layers, which has an order parameter locking, so effectively carrying Westerman and Witten term with very large level, and that's basically the large spin limit. That corresponds to the large spin limit, so the system will behave somewhat classically. And in the classical paradigm, you can never have a phase transitions between symmetry broken phases, which is continuous. So in the case where Westerman Witten terms are added, we can guess that it will become first order transition. So what happens when it becomes like canceled? So then you can imagine that it will become 3+1D nonlinear sigma model with O phi vector and theta equals pi term. And what you can show is that this model can be mapped into the so basically, you can fractionalize this O5 order parameter into fermionic partones, and with the SU2 gauge field, and this will be the theory corresponding to this nonlinear sigma model when the mass is 0. And here, the number of the Dirac fermion flavor is 2, and we know that this number of Dirac fermions is not enough to avoid the chiral symmetry breaking of the QCD. So this will, in the end, flow to the first order transition as well. So our conclusion, okay, so this is the scenario for, this is kind of generic analysis, and we should analyze what happens for the Chesterly-Sutherland lattice. So this is the way nil order parameter couples under antiferromagnet. So we can see that nil order at Lth layer will be just equivalent to a nil order at the L+1 layer, but and imaginary part of the monopole basically parameterize the square plucket, and real part of the monopole parameterize the diamond plucket. And what we can like see from the resonance picture is that this antiferromagnetic coupling would favor this two stacking up the order parameter patterns. So imaginary part of the monopole will be minus, and real part of the monopole will be plus. So determinant is minus, and basically, then this scenario should hold. So it will flow to the first order transition. But then you can ask, oh, if both scenarios, you'll just flow to the first order order transition, why would you even analyze? Doesn't matter, right? But this, there comes a speculation. So here, it seems like this first order transition is induced by some quantum fluctuation because just that your fermion flavors are not enough, so like QCD just becomes chiral symmetry breaking. But here, it's when it's added, when determinant is positive, when Western Wilson terms are added, it would probably behave like large spin limit where things are classical. So we speculate that this added tensil scenario will have a, both will be first order transition, but tensil scenario will have a somewhat larger correlation length and more like weaker first order transition behavior. Okay, so in summary, we did a monopole symmetry analysis and showed that O4 DQCP is possible. And with the infinite DMRG study, so we confirmed the phase diagram and we discussed about the absence of dangerous Ribbon scaling. And we got some indirect evidence that emergent O4 symmetry is there. And we predicted spectral features of the emergent O4 symmetry, which can be proved by inelastic neutron scattering, resonant inelastic X-ray scattering, or NMR. And finally, we discussed about coupling 2 plus 1D DQCP into 3 plus 1D and how it leads to the first order transition scenario. Okay, thanks a lot. Oh, and thanks to my collaborators, Yi Jung Yu, who is now a faculty at UC San Diego, and Subir and Ashvin at Harvard. Thank you.
Thanks for the talk. Any questions?
If you put that last conclusion in the experimental measurements that you showed, so what's your intuition there? Is it going to be that at the critical point there's going to be this deconfined quantum criticality, or is it just an effect of making the intralayer interaction stronger and stronger?
Yeah. So. Actually, when you do some perturbative analysis, you can show is that pocket phase will shrink as you increase the interlayer coupling. So probably in the experiment, what they do is not like moving from here to here, but it's moving kind of like diagonally, I believe, because compressing will also increase the interlayer coupling strength. And even if it's a DQCP, we think interlayer coupling will make it first order transition. And what we are hoping is that, the thing is, okay, you have a like DQCP fixed point and it will flow to the first order transition point. But our measurement will be all done in the finite temperature. So the physics at that finite temperature will still have some signatures of the emergent symmetry. So that's what we are hoping for. That although it's a first order transition like at large, the correlation length is large, and at finite temperature, the physics there, dynamics there, will inherit some properties of the deconfined quantum critical points.
But here, presumably, there's no serious mechanism to ensure the correlation length is large.
Yeah, there isn't. So.
So it requires fine tuning that the interlayer coming is small.
Yeah, and that's kind of hard to be tuned, right? We know.
All right, any additional questions?
Okay.
So you're assuming that your interlayer coupling is constant, like it doesn't depend on which layer you're on, right?
Right.
What happens if we change it?
I mean, interlayer coupling is like,
depends on which layer you're on. Maybe staggered.
I mean, like a staggered like sign pattern for the interlayer coupling.
Yeah.
Then there will be some competition, I guess. So, for example, if it's a like positive sign for this layer and negative sign for this layer, then these two layers will try to couple ferromagnetically, and these two will couple antiferromagnetically. And I think it's very hard to predict what's going to happen.
naively in the continuum, they just replace that order parameter coupling. You know, you basically insert a derivative, spatial derivative, into that order parameter coupling. That still looks relevant, I guess. So you, now the scaling dimension is 0.6 plus, 0.6 plus.
Yeah.
That's still relevant.
Yeah. Yeah, so our point is that, so we also made some implicit assumption. So this order parameter coupling is relevant, and its effect will be locking order parameters across the layers. And once it's locked, we can analyze what's the consequence of it locking to the topological term.
Any additional questions? All right, thanks for the talk.
Thank you.